Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and his family. I want this to be the best year ever for all our friends worldwide.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends. We are broadcasting live across America and around the world. This is the Hour to Empower with stimulating talk, views you can use, memorable quotes, and powerful life lessons. We always have hot guests and cool topics. We even have cool guests and hot topics. You always want to tune us on, tune in, and tune up with us to hear the best of the best. You do not want to miss any of our shows. Each show goes into our archives. Log into JoyceBarryandFriends.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and you will see each guest and each topic on our homepage. You can play and download any of our shows, always informative, inspiring, and motivational. You want to share these special shows with your friends, family, and contacts. You can follow us on Facebook and become a Joyce Barry subscriber and even a fan by going to our Joyce Barry and Friends fan page. Be sure to check like. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us by going to our Blog Talk Radio homepage and clicking follow right below my picture. You can also message me in any of these venues about our show, about our guests, about anything. My official website is JoyceBarry.com. Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E. The chat room is open. Log into the chat room, have fun, and chat away. I go back and forth into the chat room during the show to see what is going on in there. Motivation, inspiration, and an education. Positive, happy thoughts to improve your life, health, and finances. Take positive actions to create a gratifying lifestyle. Life lessons from me, your host, Joyce Barry, straight from the Coach's Corner. And then you will hear from our wonderful guest today. Folks, every day should be treated like a special day. We wish you the finest of friends, the opulence of opportunities, the magic of miracles, and the happiest of days. May this year be your best year ever.
Folks, we wish you a very happy, healthy Passover. And indeed, we are blessed today to have with us Rabbi Joseph Potasnik, the former president and presently the executive vice president of the New York Board of Rabbis, the largest interdenominational body of its kind in the world. The rabbi completed two terms with the New York City Campaign Finance Board and was appointed to the New York City Human Rights Commission by Mayor Michael Bloomberg at that time. He has published numerous articles that address the challenging issues of our day. He authored the foreword for the Illustrated Jewish Bible for Children. And amongst all his many, many credits, I want to say where I was most impressed and which affected us directly was his introduction to Father Brian McWeeny, priest of the Archdiocese of New York, and Reverend Marcus Miranda, senior pastor and president of Christian Clergy International, an organization dedicated to ending the persecution of Christians and other minority faith groups around the world. And yesterday we had both these holy men being our guests on our Easter celebration show, and we owe those wonderful, wonderful people to Rabbi Potasnik, who's always, as they say in Jewish, making shidduchs, bringing people together. Welcome, Rabbi Potasnik.
Thank you, Joyce. Who would have thought that shidduchs of introducing husband and wife would be referred to as a minister and a priest? But let me tell you this. I received a phone call yesterday, right after your program, from Father McWeeny, just saying thank you for allowing him to speak with pride about his tradition and to share the microphone with Reverend Miranda, who I have to tell you is also an outstanding person. Those two individuals I've come to know in the following fashion. When there is an issue confronting the Jewish people, and unfortunately we seem to have issues more often than not, they stand with us. They'll sign statements. They'll march with us. Because it's very important when we go through difficult times to know that we have allies. So you have two people who are not Jewish who recognize that we're in this together, that when one strikes Jews, one strikes all people. And, of course, when you look at what's going on around the world, Christians realize it's not just Jews who've been persecuted. It's now Christians who are experiencing some of the same pain. So thank you for allowing them to be with you. And I hope the audience recognizes that we do have some friends. Sadly, we have those who are foes and do not accept our right to live as Jews. But we look at Passover and say, yes, we taste the moro, the bitterness of life, but there is charoset. There is that mixture of, you know, the apples, the raisins, the cinnamon. So we have to try to temper some of that sorrow with sweetness. And when you have friends like you listened to yesterday, you recognize that we have to be thankful for the charoset. Let me also tell you this, Joyce. My family came to this country right after the war, and they had lost five children. And two of the people who reached out to them were, there were two nuns from St. Mary's Church in Lynn, Massachusetts. My family went to Lynn because they had a family member there. In those days, you couldn't become a public charge. You had to have a family member who would sponsor you and support you. So they went to Lynn. Now imagine two nuns in a church reached out to my parents because they said, listen, they're members of the human family. We have to help them. And they helped them find employment, rebuild their lives. They didn't have to do that. They could have said, we only care about Catholics. But they saw Catholic with a small C, meaning, you know, universal. So every year at the Passover Seder, my parents would invite those nuns to come and be guests. So I look at this time of year and I say, I'm proud to be a Jew, but I'm also proud when I can broaden the circle and include others who are there for us as we must be there for them. I met recently and I'm going to try to get him as a guest for you. He's a Muslim who is from Syria, now lives in America, was able to escape. But he said that when he was escaping from Syria and he worked with people who needed assistance as well, the first respondents were Israelis. Here he was near the border, and Israelis were helping him and others who were hurting. And he said, you know, I grew up in a home where I was taught to hate Israel, and now I see there are Jews, Israelis, who are there for us. They're not looking for anything but simply to help us because it's the right thing to do. So, again, we have to find those who do care because you can't cure unless you care. So hopefully we'll, you know, you say, may this be the best year for you. Well, we want this to be the best year, but, you know, sadly, there's much that prevents that from happening. So we're going to continue to work with allies and hope one day we can look and say, this is the best year we've had because of all those who stand with us.
Amen to that. Rabbi, We have so much to discuss here today, and I know given it's the start of the holiday this evening, you have so much to attend to. So why don't we start with the story of Passover, and then we can lead into some of the issues that are happening right here, right now, all around the world.
Well, thanks to the movie Exodus, or thanks rather to the movie The Ten Commandments, I think many people know the story. As a matter of fact, I saw a cute cartoon in New Yorker magazine some time ago where the people at the Red Sea, and they look up, and Moses says to them, you have to stop calling me Charlton, because so many people think of Charlton Heston as being Moses. But it's a very interesting story where here were people who were enslaved for some 210 years, and finally... And by the way, there's a message in all of that because they were in Egypt for a total of 400 years. So that means that 190 years weren't so bad. 210 were horrible. 190 weren't so bad. I mention that to you because Ben-Gurion, Prime Minister of Israel years ago, would say, know that story because all of a sudden Egypt turned. The Jews were welcome, and suddenly a new pharaoh arose, and the story changed drastically. And he mentioned that to people living around the world and say, you know, you're very comfortable. You seem to be complacent in where you are. Just know that that could change. And look at the front page story of Atlantic Magazine this month. Is it time for Jews to leave Europe? Now, here we are 70 years or so after the Holocaust, liberation of Auschwitz. And we're asking, should Jews leave Europe? People thought after the Holocaust they could be comfortable. So the story of Passover is not just about the Exodus, it's about where Jews were in Egypt, and finally they waited too long, became enslaved, and it took a liberator like Moses and God, the divine authority, became part of that story, of course, and they left Egypt. And what we do, sit at the Seder table and tell the story and talk about how we were slaves, and because we were slaves, because we were living under the yoke of oppression, we have to be very sensitive to those who are suffering. You know very well that in today's world, slavery still exists. We have child slavery. We have sex trafficking. We have all of these issues. And you say, my God, I thought slavery was just something of the past, and yet it's something of the present. So the Passover story says we live history. We taste history. We sit at the table, partake of the various rituals, and we can go through those rituals. But ultimately, it's the story of a people who were oppressed and were liberated into their own land to be their own people. And yet, Joyce, you and I are sitting here looking at what's going on around the world and say, well, how liberated are we if we're still worried about those who seek to destroy us? So it's not such a simple story, and it's not a story that has, altogether a beautiful ending, because the story goes on, the challenges still confront us, and we still have to be strong as a people. And one of the things you learn with Moses is Moses stood for, what was right. Moses intervened when he saw an Egyptian striking a Jew. Moses was not one who camouflaged his identity. He could have had it easy. He could have stayed, in the palace of Pharaoh. He didn't have to get involved, but he said, no, I have to have responsibility to people, my people, who are hurting. So I hope that's a message to all of us, that we're not going to be respected when we somehow hide our identity. People respect us more when we stand for something, and those who hate us are going to hate us no matter what we do, so you might as well be strong. My father used to say, if an anti-Semite moves next door to you, let him stay up all night and lose sleep. You be strong in who you are. And I think that Passover story resonates today as it did years ago.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I can't recall a time in modern day that things were as scary as they are now, as threatening as they are now. I mean, I don't know what's safe anymore, be it a mall, a synagogue, a church, a celebration, a wedding, whatever it is. We're hearing stories every day of horrible, horrible atrocities and murder.
Joyce, we just have a story in today's newspaper in New York where two women in Queens, South Jamaica, have been arrested for conspiring to blow up. Imagine what they were contemplating doing. They wanted to have a bomb go off at the funeral of a police officer, right? And they were living in Queens, and one of the comments made, supposedly by one of these women, is that why do we have to go to Syria? We can be terrorists right here without traveling anywhere. And they lived amongst, you know, their neighbors, and some neighbors were surprised, some neighbors were suspicious all along. But, yeah, we have homegrown terrorism. We have people who hate us. And I think what is so disconcerting, Joyce, is those who minimize, say, well, it's just a handful. You know, it's more than a handful. And, you know, I remember they used to say that about the Nazis. Just a handful, just a few. And that few became many. So we have to be very vigilant against those who are vicious and want to destroy what we have. But you're right, it's a dangerous time. Just imagine in Europe now, you're told, don't go with a yarmulke. Even if you put on a baseball hat, by the way, you may be a target because people now see the baseball hat as the new yarmulke. And you have police in front of houses of worship, Jewish houses of worship, in front of Jewish museums. Jewish institutions are guarded. So, you know, you look at what goes on, and Jeffrey Goldberg has an excellent piece. You know, is it time for Jews to leave Europe? And I think if you have to ask the question, then, you know, maybe you really ought to think much more seriously about partaking of that exodus. Maybe it is time for a large exodus of Jews from Europe because, as the Passover story tells us, you wait too long, a new pharaoh comes into power, and suddenly you're enslaved.
You know what's scary? You referenced, you know, that there were a few people, but it's been said that we, to prevent terrorism, have to be right each and every time. They only need to be right one time to create major damage and destruction. So, yes, it is very scary. I don't care if it's 2. I don't care if it's 10. It's very scary. And it begs the question, why are people getting more and more attracted to terrorism? We haven't stamped out any of the bad guys, any of the terrorists, any of those on the terrorism list, none of them. Yeah, yet the next one is cropping up, and the next one is cropping up. We're not winning this war, and I have to say yes, because we have to pray that we will win it sooner than later.
You know, one of the things you learn in life is when somebody says, I want to destroy you, he or she means it. You know, you have a general from Iran saying that the destruction of Israel is non-negotiable. He said it proudly. Now, he means it. So for people to minimize, say, well, he's just saying it, you know, for his own people, it's propaganda. You know, Hitler revealed what he wanted to do when you looked at Mein Kampf. It wasn't a secret. We have learned throughout history, hate mongers are very clear about their intentions. I don't think we're so clear sometimes about our seriousness in combating it, but it's not just a matter of words. It's words that become actions. So you're right. We need to be very, very much on guard because all around us there are people who want to destroy us. And isn't that what it says in the Passover Haggadah, that in every generation there are those who seek to destroy us? I just think right now in our generation, it seems it's increasing. It's not decreasing. And that's what's sad. Here I am talking about my parents, survivors of the Holocaust. They're no longer living. But here I'm talking about my parents. And I'm also talking about the present period where you have these hate mongers who want to destroy us, you know, once again. So the Holocaust may have ended, but the spirit of the Holocaust permeates the hearts and heads of too many people in our time.
Well, you brought up about the Iran dictator. I mean, we all know that 24/7 in the news is about Obama pushing for this deal with Iran. And yet, when it's mentioned about Israel to take, you know, to say that they will give up that mission to destroy Israel, Iran won't even discuss it. That is not open for discussion. So how can we have a deal with that still on the table? And how could we have a deal with the number one ally being Israel saying it's not a good deal? Israel with probably the greatest intelligence in the world. Why aren't we listening to our number one ally and what they have to say?
You know, Joyce, if the world wanted to stop Iran, the world could strangle them economically. If the world were serious in preventing Iran from becoming a nuclear threat, the world working together could do that. But when you have people pursuing their own interests, when you have Russia and China doing what they think is right for them, not necessarily what's right for Israel or the other parts of the free world, you don't have a collective response. So I think you're right. Look, Israel is in a very vulnerable place. And well, I was listening to Ambassador Dennis Ross yesterday. He was part of the peace negotiations over the years, not part of the Iranian discussions. But he said something very interesting. He said, when we first began these negotiations with Iran, everybody spoke about maintaining nuclear energy for peaceful purposes. That was what it was all about. But that's no longer the discussion. The discussion is now how long, you know, of a breakout period, how long before they become a nuclear power. That's not what we thought of originally. So we've changed the character of the negotiations. It's now about, you know, how much time do we have before they become this world threat? And I think people need to recognize that, you know, Iran has this underground reactor. It has other places, and the International Atomic Energy Agency has said, we can't verify them. Every time we come, you know, they hide, they change, they lie. Now, this is by the internet. This is not the Israeli agency. This is the international agency. So they say they're hard to verify, and we just have, let's say, a year breakout time. That's a very short period, it seems to me, to prevent them from going fully nuclear because, you know, the agency simply reports. It doesn't stop. It reports. Now you have a report. You got to go through the other bodies. You know how bureaucracy works. So how much time are we really talking about? And while that clock is running, Israel is on the front line of attack. So it's very easy to sit here. I always say we have more defense ministers of Israel, you know, in Manhattan telling Israel what they should do while they live securely here in New York. It's those people in Israel who have to face consequences and have to protect themselves fully. So when we look at an agreement, we got to make sure every precautionary measure has been taken to prevent Iran from being the nuclear power. But, you know, you look at this and you say, where's the verification? How strong is it? It hasn't worked thus far. What makes you think it's going to work now? And when it doesn't work, how much time do you really have to do something? And do you have the will to do something? So a lot of questions to ask. And let me be very clear about something, Joyce. I live here in New York. We have two senators, Gillibrand and Schumer. We would hope that those senators in New York, we have, you know, the largest Jewish population in America. We would hope that those two senators take the lead in standing up for what is right, protecting Israel, because they often proclaim that. Well, proclamation must be followed by performance. So we're going to watch our senators very carefully to see what they're doing. I got to tell you this, Robert Menendez, even though he has some serious issues legally now, Robert Menendez has been a major voice. Bob Corker from Tennessee has been a major voice. Well, we want other major voices. This is not just, you know, what's good for Israel. This is what's good for Israel and the free world. So we elected leaders because of their commitment to protecting us and doing that which is right. We want to see what they're going to do, not just what they're going to say.
Absolutely. And the scary part of what's going on with these negotiations, that it might just be more about Obama's legacy, about Obama's claim to fame that he got this deal regardless of the consequences. And you said to, you know, watch our senators. Well, I printed out a list of every Democratic senator that boycotted the Netanyahu speech before Congress. I could not believe the stupidity of doing that when they are our biggest advocates ally. They have so much intelligence, know what's going on, and they boycotted it. And at that one action, I made the decision. I've been a Democrat my entire life, never even in question. But out of that one decision, I haven't decided yet if I'm switching to independent or Republican. I don't want to be a Democrat. That was totally outrageous to boycott our number one ally and friend. So,
I got to tell you something. It's interesting, Joyce. I remember when Castro came to New York some time ago and spoke in front of a large audience. I didn't hear people boycotting the speech. Ahmadinejad from Iran years ago, who said some of those heinous things, wiping Israel off the map and the Holocaust is a myth. I didn't hear about people boycotting the speech. I would think that when Netanyahu comes in, that you welcome him. You could disagree. You know, one of the things that
right,
Jews are not afraid
exactly.
of is disagreement. You know, you pick up any Israeli paper and you're going to read two columns on every one issue, not one. One in favor, one opposed. You look at the Supreme Court, there's a majority and minority opinion. Well, I think in Israel, there are many majority opinions. Everybody feels he or she is part of the majority. But the point is, if we really want to have a serious debate or discussion, we got to hear the other side. You know, in Jewish history, we have the schools of Hillel and Shammai. They had, as I remember, some 310 arguments. And Hillel would do something very interesting. Hillel won most of the arguments, according to our history. But Hillel would quote Shammai first and say, this is what my adversary says. This is what I say. And why you can't talk about this is what my ally says, and this is where I disagree with my ally, not my adversary. I don't get it. I don't understand it. And by the way, sadly, some of those people I know were from the Black Caucus, and I think of Jewish history in terms of how we stood together. It was shameful that right now during this pivotal time in our history that some people would say better to boycott. And I will also be very honest with you. There were a few who were Jews who said, no, I'm not going to listen to the Prime Minister of Israel because, you know, he's embarrassed the president by coming here. Oh, that's nonsense. That is just nonsense. And people should be ashamed of what they did. And I'm glad you published the list. Let them know who are our real representatives, who's serious and who's superficial, who just, you know, says the right things and who does the right things. And we have to hold them accountable
Absolutely.
In their commitment. Yep.
I was really upset, but beyond upset, I thought, how stupid is that? Well, folks, you're hearing it here. I mean, I want to talk more when we come back right after our commercial break. I want to talk more about the holiday and some of the traditions mm-hmm. and rituals. I do mm-hmm. want to do that. But I think it was important to note because this is going on right here and right now, those negotiations. And to not listen to Netanyahu, who knows more about it probably than any other power, that country, because it's a matter of life and death, not just another attack. Life and death, survival. And we want to stick to our proclamation, never again. But something, folks, I want you to do again and again, and that is to listen to this radio show. Here's why.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day, a way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the Internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce, Barry, and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And folks, for that to happen, we ask you to partner up with us. Go to Joyce Barry and Friends, B-A-R-R-I-E, and Friends.com. And right under my picture on the upper left of the homepage, it says follow. Simply click on that, and you will get a message, an email message about our show, about our guests, about our topic. You need not miss any show. And those of you that can't join us live at 11 a.m. Eastern, well, then, know that it's in our archives, each and every show, in our archives for your listening pleasure 24/7. And you can even download the shows. You can send out the links so you need not miss any of them. Rabbi, first, let's get back to Passover here. Let me wish you, your family, all our friends all over the world a very happy, healthy Passover.
Thank you so much.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the rituals. You referenced the Seder, but let's tell them a little bit more for people who are saying,
sure.
What's a Seder?
What's a Seder? Let me tell you one quick story. You know, Seder means order because there is a sequence at the Seder. We have to follow the narrative and the instructions. And I think back when I first became a rabbi, so we had 9 people at a service once for, you know, we need 10 for a minyan. So I said, all right, I was a young kid. Let me go outside and see if I can get one more. So I stood in front of the synagogue. A gentleman walks by, and I said, look, we need one more for the service. Could you join us? Because I, you know, he identified himself as being Jewish. He said, I don't believe in organized religion. So I said to him, sir, if we were organized, would I be standing in front of a synagogue stopping people on the street, asking them to join the service? So the Seder means organization, order. And we go through a ritual. You know, the first thing we do, I find it fascinating. We begin with a statement, let all people who are hungry come and eat. Now, Joyce, just imagine, here we are beginning a Seder, and we said, you know, even if you didn't get an invitation, you're getting one now. And you would say to me, but wait a minute, that's a little bit late to start inviting more people. And my answer to you is it's never too late to invite people to your Seder. It's never too late to find room for one more. My mother always taught me that. If I called at the last minute and said, I have a friend who can't get home for Passover, can I bring him or her with me? She'd say, of course, there's always room for another person at the table. So we make that declaration. We say, let all who are needy, not just all who are hungry, but all who are needy, those who are hurting. You know, there are people who are alone, and I think of the many people who say, I wish I could attend a Seder. I have no place to go. And we at the Board of Rabbis, we make sure that everybody that is in touch with us finds a place. And we connect people with Siddurim. So it's a time to come together, and I think that's part of the ritual, is to recognize we need family. We need friends. We need community. So you have to have a place at the Seder. And you sit down. And you look at all of these ritualistic items on the table. You have the shank bone, which reminds us of the Paschal lamb, the sacrifice. You have the egg, which has a number of interpretations. One, of course, it was also a holiday offering. So you had, you know, the special holiday sacrifice in addition to the Paschal lamb. But the egg has a quality that, you know, the more you cook it, the harder it gets. And that says something about the character of our people, that the more hardship we face, the stronger we became. But it's also about hope. And so you look at the parsley, and it's a time of spring. You look at the salt water, reminiscent of the tears. You look at the bitter herbs, talking about, you know, the difficult times, the bitter times. But that has to be tempered with a taste of charos, as we said before. I'm sure you remember Shakespeare's famous quotation, parting is such sweet sorrow. And I always looked at that and I said, yeah, what's sweet sorrow? Is it sorrowful or is it sweet? Which one is it? And I recall years ago, a friend of mine sent me some chocolate for the holiday and it was bittersweet. I said, why'd you send me bittersweet? Why'd you send me sweet? He said, because life is bittersweet. You have to have both. Nobody has only sweet. Nobody has only bitter. So when you sit at the table, you look at that and you say, well, I can't just have the maror by itself. I can't just have the charoset by itself. I have to have the sandwich of the two together to show that, you know, life has its challenges, but hopefully when we're surrounded by family and friends, when we're surrounded by people who care about us, that helps mitigate some of the pain. And, you know, you recline on your left side because it's a sign of freedom. You don't have to sit in the tension. You don't have to listen to some master instructing you what to do. You can feel relaxed. You can feel free. And the other part of it is that, you know, you have this reference in the Haggadah to the different children, the wise, the simple, the rebellious, and the one that doesn't ask a question. And that should say to us that at the Seder table, you have people with different backgrounds. And let's stop, for at least for the nights of the Seder, at least 2 days of Passover, let's stop knocking somebody else. Joe Lieberman years ago came forward with an idea. How about if we have a day, one day when there's a moratorium on gossip? We're going to have one day of the year we're not going to talk about somebody else. And I think when we talk about those kids, it is a reminder that we spend a lot of time criticizing and not enough time complimenting. And the fact that you can have kids sitting at that table who look at this and say, wow, what is all this? And this is not for me, or this is for me, or I don't understand what this is, or, you know, explain more because I just don't have a background here. There's room for all of them. Of course, what's sad is someone said we have a fifth child at the fifth child, the one that's not at the table. There's one that says, I'm too busy. I'm going on spring break. I don't have time to come home. I'll be away, you know, and that's a hurtful one because you think back to our seders of our parents and grandparents, and we wouldn't think of being elsewhere. We wanted to be with them. But when you look at the Seder plate, Joyce, it's not just about, as I said, remembering the lamb, the Paschal lamb, not just remembering a holiday sacrifice. It's about doing now. So you have to taste it now. You can't just point to it and say, that's how it was. No, this is how it is. So, as I said before, we taste history. You know, there's an interesting inscription as you leave the Diaspora Museum in Israel, and it says, to live in the present, to look at the past, and to look forward to the future. And I think when you're at the Seder table, you do all of that. We're living, but we're also looking back. But you say, may this be the best year, and don't we say next year in Jerusalem? You know, we say, well, this is, should be the best year, but if not, let next year be the best year. We're always looking forward to a better time. So I think that all of those elements are there. I was reading an article, great article yesterday. You know, this is the age of the selfie, where people take pictures of themselves. And Passover says, you know what, the selfie isn't good enough, because that picture you take should be of different people sitting at the table with you. Let that be the picture, not just the picture of you. So I think, you know, this beautiful ritual and that I just mentioned is also the opening of the door for Elijah, who is the precursor of the Messiah. Right, we say that, you know, hopefully Elijah will come and announce the Messiah is coming in. And keep in mind, when we lived years ago in Europe in the 30s and before that as well, people were afraid to open their doors because Jews were accused of, you know, this blood libel of using the blood of Christian children to bake matzah. And sometimes there were dead bodies found at the doors. There was horrific stories. When I came to New York, I met a wonderful rabbi, Benjamin Kreitman, and he told me growing up in Europe, in Poland, Easter was a very painful period because Jews were attacked. They were still blamed for, you know, deicide. Well, thankfully now we can open the door and we can welcome Elijah. So, again, it gives us a chance to say thank you, America. Thank you, Israel. Thank you for those free places where we can be ourselves, and we can do it together with others. So I think there's a lot of beauty. There's singing that goes on, and also preparation. You know, think back to those seders. It didn't just happen instantly. I know sometimes we live in an age of instant coffee, instant tea. Everything's instant. But the seder required preparation, and we think of our parents who would really spend a good deal of time a few days before Passover preparing. It was, you know, it wasn't easy, but it was worth it because they look forward to when we would all sit together at the table. It just shows you that nothing comes easy. You have to prepare. You can't just have this instant gratification. So Passover has many, many messages in it. I hope that people, and by the way, you know, I hear sometimes people say the following to me. Well, if I can't have a Seder like my grandparents, I don't want to have a Seder at all. You know, it's very easy to say all or nothing. If I can't do it all, I won't do anything. But we never take that position in other areas of life. For example, we don't say to our kids, if you don't get a 4.0 in college, don't go to college. If you don't, you know, be a millionaire, don't bother working. Something is better than nothing. So people have different kinds of Seders. There are many Haggadahs. I've never been to a Seder where everybody has the same Haggadah.
That's true.
Right? I've never been to a Seder where some of the Haggadahs don't have wine stains on them. Right? And some years ago, somebody thought that Maxwell House coffee was the only ones that made the Haggadahs. But there are different kinds. And by the way, we all come to the Seder, in a sense, with a different Haggadah because we all have different needs and we all have, you know, different thoughts. But the Seder is that place where all of us are able to sit together, hopefully with respect for one another. We live at a time that's very divisive, where difference is not tolerated. And maybe Passover is a respite. Maybe Passover is a time to say, stop. Stop all that fighting and find a time to talk rather than yell. So I look at Passover as a necessary holiday. Of course, the matzah, you know, I think the matzah was the original fast food where you have flour and water, 18 minutes, because the Jews were in a hurry to get out of Egypt. So they couldn't have all of the rations that we normally would take. It was just very, very fast. I'm always taken by the fact that we speak of the matzah as the bread of the poor. I think it's about $20 a pound already at some places. So it's not so much the poor anymore. But it is symbolically the bread of the poor because you look at it, it's very bare. You break it and you have, you know, some is used for later. Maybe that's a lesson that, you know, when you're poor, you have to, you know, you have to divide what you have and put some away for later. So that's one message. And the second is we break the matzah to use later on for the hidden matzah, which is we hide matzah and we allow our kids to find them and then we reward them. That's a way of keeping kids engaged. It's a way of saying that, you know, this is not for adults only. This is for family, family approved. So all of us have a place at the Seder, young, old, believers, non-believers, it doesn't matter. What matters is that you're welcome at the Seder table.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've been talking about Passover and the service, and you might have the question, is Passover only for Jews? And the answer is definitely not. While Passover marks the birth of the Jewish people as a free nation, it speaks to the larger human impulse to be free, and that is why so many people, both Jewish and not, celebrate the holiday. In addition to the large number of Jewish families, which either include non-Jewish members or welcome non-Jewish guests to their own Passover celebrations, increasing numbers of Christian communities celebrate their own Seders, emulating what must have been an important part of Jesus' life experience in the first century. So it should be duly noted that oftentimes Jewish people invite non-Jews to their table, and a lot of non-Jews have their own Seders as well.
Yeah, look, it's interesting. Again, we take for granted the relationships we share in America. I went to a meeting the other day at the fire department, and we're talking about how to keep Passover safe because, you know, we've had some tragedies. Each year, sadly, there are some horror stories that come out. Sometimes with the burning of the chametz, we burn the bread to show that we have to rid ourselves of the bread before Passover, and sometimes people have been should we say, negligent in the way they handle that, and it's caused a lot of serious accidents. But here we have a meeting at FDNY to say, how do we get guidelines out there to the community in Yiddish, in Russian, in Hebrew, in English, so that those observing Passover will do it safe, because sacred has to mean safe as well. And I'm thinking to myself, can you imagine Who would have thought that here we have FDNY worried about Passover, FDNY talking about how do we educate the community in different languages about the safety necessities of Passover. What a great country we live in. Then I went to a meeting at the mayor's office a few weeks ago with the mayor's office for media, and they're talking about, you know, there are film crews that come into neighborhoods to film various productions, and sometimes they do it right before the Jewish holiday. And the meeting was, how do we be more sensitive so that, you know, if it's Passover, we don't have film crews during Passover, people going to the synagogue, observing, don't have to walk around trucks and all of this interference with the, you know, the kind of celebration or the spiritual calm of the holiday. Can you imagine? Who would have thought that? That, you know, their people care to that level. So once again, Passover is a time to recognize the, you know, the beauty of the place in which we live, especially when we live in America or we live in Israel. I guarantee you that those who are observing Passover in Europe look at that passage in every generation. There are those who seek to destroy us. They look at that through a different lens because those who seek to destroy them are living among them. Imagine you're living in Iran and you're trying to observe Passover, or Venezuela, or these different places where anti-Semitism is on the rise. How do you say we're free when you're looking over your shoulder? So it's a good time to reflect on the blessings of this land and to say thank you. And that's why when you talk about Jews and non-Jews, we've come a long way. This is not how it was, but thank God it's where it is now.
Well, we still have quite a long way to go. And my message yesterday with our Easter show is the same message as today. If all good people will join together as one, we have a big enemy out there that just seeks to destroy us. So we should all really be as one. I often wonder about these atrocities that are perpetuated by the Muslim culture. I'm not saying every Muslim is a bad person, but what I don't understand is why the good Muslims aren't speaking up against the atrocities, why that isn't being broadcast everywhere, that it isn't our religion to destroy others. That's what I don't understand. You don't hear a word out of that camp.
Well, if you do, it's somewhat muted, I guess. You don't hear enough. And that's why I go back to what I said earlier about the handful, because I've often felt if it's only a handful, if it's only a few, then there should be no problem with the overwhelming majority standing together. And you're right, we need to hear more. Responsible people need to behave in a much more responsible fashion. It's not enough to close your eyes or close your ears and say it's not us. You have to stand against those who seek to destroy us. Yes, there are a number of good people, and we encounter many Muslims who care. There's a gentleman named Dr. Zudi Jasser. He's in Arizona, and he's Muslim. He served in the United States Navy. He is the Islamic Forum for Democracy is his organization, and they come out with statements, all kinds of pronouncements. They have a website. But he says, look, we need more people to stand with us. It's not enough. Can't just have a handful standing with us. It's got to be the many against the few. I'm concerned that the few are more than we think, and that the more than we think are not just over there, they're over here. It's a call for concern and commitment. You know, if you claim to be religious, then you have a responsibility to be vocal. Religious people in particular, people of principle, people who are decent, they have to be, you know, in the forefront of being outspoken when it comes to, you know, the hate that is going to destroy us. And by the way, it's, again, and I've said this before, and I'm sure you said it, it starts with Jews, it doesn't stop with Jews. We see what happened with Jews, with Christians, and with Muslims. Look what's happening. Look in Pakistan. We have in a mosque, a bomb goes off. You know, don't tell me that's about the Palestinian issue. It's got nothing to do with the Jews. You can't blame the Jews for what happens in a mosque in Pakistan. There are churches that are being destroyed throughout Europe, in the Middle East, rather. You can't blame the Jews for that. So
people are prone, unfortunately, to blame the Jews for everything. That's a major problem, including 9/11. They're saying the Jews weren't there. There were thousands, you know, Jews that were involved, engaged in those towers when they went down. Yet they say it was the Jews. And it's that propaganda that perpetuates all the hatred. I just want to say that one of my favorite quotes, however, is that by Edmund Burke. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And no one could make a greater mistake than he who did nothing, because he could do only a little. And that's what you were saying, Rabbi, and I wanted to back you up on that one. I so agree.
You know, Jewish tradition says that silence is a form of agreement, of acquiescence. How many times when people don't say anything, we believe you're supporting, you know, the hate. You're support, because you can't just let it go if it really bothers you. If you don't say anything, it shows that it really is not bothering you all that much. And therefore, we need to stand together. You know, we saw, for example, where was it, in Den, Copenhagen? There were a group of Muslims that stood arm in arm around a synagogue on a Friday night and said to Jews, "We will protect you." That was very nice. But we need more of that. We need more
where
of those.
Was that?
You know,
I hadn't heard that one.
I think, I think it was in Denmark. You'll take a look. I think it was in Denmark. It was a ring around a synagogue comprised of Muslims who said, "You live amongst us. This is our responsibility to stand with you." And they stood around the synagogue in Denmark itself. But we need to see more expressions of that. Look, we were with the Consul General of France a few weeks ago, and I said to him, all of us were very taken by what happened, in terms of the outpouring, that march of solidarity, when there was attack at Hyper Kasher, the kosher meat market in France, and Charlie Hebdo, the newspaper. But the truth is, if it weren't for Charlie Hebdo, I don't think we would have seen that kind of march, because there were attacks before that in the suburbs of France, and we didn't see any outpouring to match that solidarity. So it just can't be, you know, when it's a newspaper that's attacked, people become infuriated. It should be when Jews are attacked, they should be just as furious. There should be, you know, that kind of solidarity. So,
absolutely.
You know, we have a lot to do.
One more reference about Passover and Easter. And if you wonder how they're related, the tradition of calculating the date of Easter based on the date of Passover ended many centuries ago. Yet, the holidays share some very deep truths of which all people can avail themselves. Who doesn't need to be reminded that however dark life may be, that however cold and lifeless the winter has been, the promise of spring and the possibility of rebirth and renewal is always there, whether discovered in the story of a nation making the journey from Abraham's early successes to the Israelite slavery and subsequent redemption, or in the story of one who lives, dies, and is born again. We must all celebrate that life holds more possibility and potential than we first imagined, that there is reason for hope, and that in celebrating triumph of hope from the past, we can unleash new stories of hope in the present and in the future. So I say, please pray for Israel and pray for world peace and good people all over of any ethnicity, race, color, creed. Stand together as one when you see these horrible things happening to human beings everywhere.
Well, I think when we walk away from the Seder table, we recognize the last thing we taste is the matzah, not the moror. I know there's a lot of preparation into the bitter herbs, but that can't be the last taste in our mouths. We have a lot of moral, but as you say, we have to work towards making it a better time for all decent people. We're in this together. This is not a battle of just the few. It's a battle of the many against all of those who want to destroy us. So let the last taste in our mouths be of the matzah, be of the, you know, the freedom, be of the liberty that should engulf all of us who want to live together.
Absolutely. And folks, I want to remind you one more time to please tune into our show yesterday, our Easter celebration with Father Brian McWeeny and Reverend Marcos Miranda. It was a very wonderful show as well to celebrate Easter. And like I tell folks, you don't have to be Christian to appreciate. You don't have to be Christian to appreciate Easter. You don't have to be Jewish to appreciate Passover. Let's appreciate and celebrate these holidays together and all be on the same team called the Team for World Peace. Rabbi, what closing message would you like to give our listeners?
Well, there is a beautiful blessing in Hebrew. May you see the world of your dreams during your lifetime. And I think when we sit at the Seder table, and as you've expressed so eloquently today, when we think of each other, when we think of our Christian friends, our Jewish friends, our Muslim friends, we have a dream. And the dream is that all of us will be able to sit together, not just on Passover, but throughout our lives. You know, we talk about the lion and the lamb. We don't want to replace the lamb every day. We want the lion and the lamb. We want all the people who are different to be able to come together. So the world of our dreams can be realized when we're committed to making them the realities of life. So that only can happen when all of us are working together to make this, as you say, the best year. As long as that becomes our goal, I think we have a chance of witnessing that in our lifetime. But it's the decent against the indecent, and we believe, people of faith, that ultimately the decent will triumph.
Let's pray for that to happen, of course. And also, I would like to ask of you to please say a prayer for all of us. I would appreciate your closing with that.
Well, we pray that Almighty God, as we begin Passover, this holy period for us, as Christians begin the holy period for them, that we recognize we have a choice. We can build walls or we can build bridges. Walls separate us from one another. Bridges allow us to walk together. So this is a time when all of us need to see that we can have different faiths as we have different faces, but there comes a time, such as this week, when all of us must face one another with our different faiths, with our different faces, as members of one family. Amen.
Amen. Very beautiful. So first, let me thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking time out of your really busy schedule, especially on these high holy holidays, and to be with us today. Thank you again for the incredible introduction to Father McWeeny and Reverend Miranda, who provided us with an awesome Easter celebration show just yesterday, folks, in our archives. So I'm very grateful to you, Rabbi. You're an extraordinary person. And we really love you. And you have an open invitation anytime you have any message to be on our show. You are always welcome on our show.
Well, thank you. And thank you for all you do, Joyce.
You're most welcome, and that's what my life is about, the way I know to make a difference, and that's using this vehicle. So here is my special prayer that I wrote for all of you. Make this the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your troubles, your trials and tribulations. May this be the first day. It is the first day of the rest of your life. May it be the beginning of the very best of your life, with extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make it the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, creating magical memories, and manifesting marvelous miracles. Folks, I'm a strong believer in miracles. I believe they're all around us. They're all around you, if only you believe in them and are open to receiving them. I'm a firm believer they're right there. Just open up your minds and your hearts. And folks, here is our celebration song to celebrate Passover. Those of you who celebrate Easter, let's all celebrate together to make for a better world, a world of peace and harmony for all people. Here's our celebration song.
listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again, as Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Have a fantastic day and listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.